Okay, let's continue now with A Touch of Grey. It's time for hour two of our big two-hour weekend get-together here on A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison, and here is the host of the show, Carol Marks, in conversation with Suzanne Ruff. She's become one of the nation's leading speakers and advocates on organ donation and shares her personal story in her inspirational book titled The Reluctant Donor.
Now, Suzanne, you're from a family that's been plagued by kidney disease for generations. Many of your family members have needed organ donations. What was happening in your family history that caused this need? And is there a genetic component to this disease? And are you lucky enough not to have the deadly gene?
Yes, the reason our family is all because of polycystic kidney disease. I always say that it affected my life even before I was born, because I was named after my grandmother who had polycystic kidney disease in the 1940s, and there was nothing the doctors could do for her, and I was named after her. My mother was her youngest child, youngest of six, and my mother was a teenager when she died. And five of my grandmother's six children inherited the disease. My mother had three children, and I'm the oldest, and I'm the only one of my mother's children that did not inherit this disease.
And this disease does not have a cure. And I was wondering if you could tell us about the fact that one half of the people who have polycystic kidney disease, why is it they end up needing a new kidney?
Well, polycystic kidney disease, poly means many, and multiple cysts of varying sizes grow over both kidneys, eventually causing them to fail. They're not malignant cysts. They're fluid-filled cysts, and they have uncontrolled cell proliferation, and it causes both kidneys to fail. The only treatment is dialysis or a transplant.
With PKD, people usually go on dialysis. And is there a misconception out there that once a patient is on dialysis, that their kidney problems are solved? What's the truth about this?
And I think, Carol, that's an excellent point. A lot of people think, oh, well, you have dialysis. But dialysis is a wonderful life-saving gift that when I wrote in my book, many of the people I loved most didn't have the option to go on dialysis. And I don't want someone diagnosed today with kidney disease to forget how far we've come just in my lifetime. But dialysis is a difficult life. Our mother was on dialysis for 10 years. And my sister was on dialysis, and she always said she would like the nurses to try eating the diet that a dialysis patient must follow. And I don't think any of us understand how wonderful our kidneys are. They clean out almost 52 gallons of blood per day in each of us, and they remove toxins. Well, when you're on dialysis, it's a machine that's doing what your kidneys do. It cleans your blood for you. But it is a very difficult life on dialysis.
Now let's fast forward to the heart of the story. When you learned your sister Joanne had polycystic kidney disease, how old was she at the time she learned that she had it, and how sick was she?
My sister collapsed with polycystic kidney disease just after our mother died. My sister was 50 years old at the time. I sometimes think that's why a lot of people don't know about PKD, is because it usually strikes midlife. We have another sister who was affected in her kidneys began to fail in her 30s. I also think it's because there's no famous movie star. But my mother had just died, and my sister collapsed and was in critical condition and was told that she had polycystic kidney disease. And there's a caveat to this story, because our parents had us tested when we were teenagers and told us that none of us had polycystic kidney disease. They lied to us, and that was their way of protecting us, I think. But it was a very traumatic time, with our mother just dying and my sister being diagnosed.
When your sister was diagnosed and told that she needed a kidney transplant, How long was the waiting list to get a kidney from a cadaver, someone who had passed away?
Well, she needed, she was on immediately put on dialysis, and because they said she was so critically ill. And I knew that the wait at that time in 2004 was, there were about 90,000 people on the waiting list. There's over 117,000 today. And she faced a 5 to 6 year wait for a transplant from a cadaver. And today you face a 6 to 8 year wait. So I knew what kind of life my sister was going to face because of having seen and watched our mother battle polycystic kidney disease. So I called her in the hospital and blurted right out to her that I'd give her one of my kidneys.
When you told her that you were going to give her one of the kidneys, that was really extraordinary because at the time you did not have a good relationship with her. Why was that, and what did you learn was behind the way she was acting that you didn't like?
You're right. At my mother's funeral a few months earlier, I had told my husband I was never to speak to my sister Joanne again because I wasn't getting along with her. And the reason I wasn't getting along with her is because I thought she had changed. She had become moody and grumpy, and I wasn't any fun to be around, and she was always crabby and snapping at people. And it was a real revelation to me because I realized that she wasn't mean and grumpy. She was ill. And I have a sentence in my book that illness brings you to your knees. And I realized when she collapsed that how much I really did love her. I really had to look deeply within myself to see that I had been the one judgmental. So I really had a awakening when I realized that she had changed because she was ill and she wasn't facing, she was in denial. She'll admit it. She's actually a great spokesperson now for not doing and not handling PKD the way she did.
You agreed to donate the kidney to your sister, but you also had overwhelming doubts and really very strong fears. What were your strong fears all about?
Oh, I immediately regretted that I offered to give her one of my kidneys, and to her credit, she told me first that I needed to be sure I did not have PKD, which in fact they thoroughly tested me for, but she also knew that I am like the cowardly lion in The Wizard of Oz. I lack courage, and I think I associate, I've been known to faint at the sight of blood, and I don't think anybody likes to be in the hospital. I just associated hospitals with death because of my family's past history with PKD, and I just was very squeamish. I think a lot of people are, and I really actually wanted to change my mind and to tell her. I a couple days felt like I'm not going to do this. I'm going to change my mind, and then I knew another moment would come and I would realize what she faced. But to my sister's credit, she always told me every day that I could change my mind.
Now, what was the biggest thing that enabled you to work through these fears?
Definitely my faith. And we're a big Irish Catholic family from the south side of Chicago. And yet we're a family with a great sense of humor. And even though we squabble, as all families do, I don't care what anybody says, families squabble and argue and don't get along some days, but there's an underlying love that we have for each other that we work hard at. But I think it's the example that our mother set and the other aunts and uncles in our family, their belief in God and in faith and in being able to turn to God for the strength to get through it is what got me through everything I did for my sister. I journal, I pray, I swim, and I have an incredible husband.
Now, organs for transplants are so desperately needed. What do you think can be done to increase the supply of them?
Well, I like talking about it. Even though disease and death is a dreadful thing to talk about, I volunteer with the organ procurement organizations, and you're more likely to know someone who needs a transplant than to know someone who's from a donor family. And so I tell our story so that people could see that in the event of a sudden or unexpected death, to be an organ donor. Oh, and I always stress that I don't think people should run out and be a living donor. I think that's an extremely personal decision. But to be an organ donor in the event of a sudden or an unexpected death is the greatest thing you could do for your fellow man.
That's Suzanne Ruff in conversation with Carol Marks. Her book is titled The Reluctant Donor. It's published by Beaver's Pond Press. For more information, go to thereluctantdonor.com. Carol Marks returns with more interesting and informative conversation when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in just a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you're the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps, so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and here's the host of the show again, Carol Marks, in conversation now with Michael Haney. He's going to talk about his memoir titled After Visiting Friends, A Son's Story, published by Scribner.
Now let's go to that Chicago night when your family was told your father was killed. He was 35 years old. How old were you and your brother?
I had just turned 6 and my brother was 8. So my mother was 33.
And what were you told about your father's death at that time?
Well, we were told that he had, we were told by our uncle that he had gotten off of work. He worked the late shift, which was in newspaper terms called the lobster shift. It was 6 p.m. to 2 a.m. He put together the morning paper for folks. And we were told that he had been found dead near his car after having a heart attack by some police officers. And as I got older, that story never really added up to me. And it was when I got a little older, I found these obituaries that said he died after visiting friends, which was where I get the title of the book. So the book is, you know, it's about, I think, all of us. It's a very personal story. It's my story, but, you know, it's also a very universal story. And by that, I mean, it's a family story, and we all have families. And inside every family, there's secrets. And,
oh, boy, are there ever.
Yeah, and when we sort of go in search of the answers to those secrets, we find some truths that ultimately help us to move forward in our lives.
Now, here's a question. Why did you wait until you were 38 to start investigating your father's death?
Well, I think it was like all of us. I was just talking about family secrets. You know, I was afraid. I was afraid of what I might find. And I think when we all look at our families and think, well, I wonder about that question we never answer, that thing we never talk about. And I had fear of what I could find, and what if I found something that would upset my mother and my brother. So I had to sort of wait. And then when I got also to be around the age my father was when he died, you know, I thought, I just need to find this out. And it's one of the things I say in the book, and I think why the book resonates with folks, is, you know, sometimes in our lives, Carol, in order to go forward, we need to go into the past. And so I had to go into my family's past and my father's past and find out that piece of that puzzle so that I could move forward in my life.
Now, you went on a hunt, and it took you to Chicago hospitals and even morgues. What was that like? That must have been a little scary.
On the surface, it would be scary, but, you know, in fact, I found some wonderful people in working in the morgues and in the hospitals, and, you know, there were some of the most inspiring folks I met. And again, when we think about all of us taking these journeys to find out answers about our families or ourselves, you know, the book, I think, is very inspirational to folks, because you can't believe the people who are out there, strangers that you don't even know that you will meet, who will help you and rise up to help you once you sort of take your journey. And so I found two women, one at the morgue and one at the hospital, who inspired me and gave me wisdom and even prayed over me. So it's a pretty powerful thing. You know, and these were strangers I never knew were out there until I started taking that journey.
Well, Michael, there was, though, one group of people that were very unhelpful, and that is the newspaper men who actually worked with your dad, and you went to them to find out what they knew, mm-hmm. and you got the most unsettling reaction from one of your dad's colleagues. I mean, what did he say? It was awful, I think.
Well, you know, he said, I don't think you have the right to know the truth. And, you know, it sounds like a harsh thing, but as I say, you know, all these people, they were acting out of the best of intentions, and that is to protect me and protect my mother from this knowledge. And, you know, it's again, I think a reason the book resonates with readers is there's many moments where the reader has to wonder, well, what would I do? How would I respond in this situation? What would my decision be? And put yourself in the place of that man who knew my father 40-some years ago. And if, you know, I came knocking on your door and said, tell me something about my father or my mother, and we all have to then sort of do that moral decision in our mind, like, do I tell him? And because, you know, we all say we want the truth, but we all sort of know what happens to people who tell the truth to people who might not be ready for it. And so I think some people made that decision, and others fortunately helped me. But again, it's a moment when all of us can identify ourselves and think, how would I respond in this moment?
Oh, absolutely. Now, your father worked in a bygone era, mm-hmm. of a still nocturnal newspaper world. You write beautifully about it. What were the hard, because they were very hard and they were bold, masculine reporters like, and what kind of an atmosphere did they work in, and particularly your dad? Did he have a stressful job?
Very stressful. You know, it's interesting you said at the beginning of your very lovely introduction that it's a love story, and it's interesting, you know, my mother and father met in the newspaper world. My mother started working there when she was 16 as a Gal Friday back in the day at the Chicago Tribune. And they worked in this very, you know, front page era. And my father's job eventually at the time of his death was, he was the copy desk chief. And I guess the best way for folks to imagine, like, well, what does that mean? It's a lot of pressure, because imagine every story that appears in the paper comes through your desk, and you have to make sure it doesn't have any errors in it. So it's almost like you're a one-man air traffic control, but instead of landing all these airplanes, you've got to land all these stories in the paper on deadline and make sure they're all right. And so that was a lot of pressure for him.
Now, you encountered a lot of stonewalling, but it didn't discourage you. And without spoiling anything, because I'm not going to tell you the ending of what, when you found out the truth about your father, did you at first, when you did learn what had happened to him, consider not writing the book and not saying anything about what you had found out?
I did. And you know, as I say, and I'm not trying to be coy for our listeners out there, but, you know, the book is After Visiting Friends. It's a title. And so I had to go find these friends, and then, but once I found out that truth, I then, as I mentioned earlier, had this fear of talking to my mother and brother about it, and I think it's a fear we all can identify with, and I had to struggle with, well, even though I found out the truth, does that mean they want to know, and should I share it? And I fortunately did, and, you know, my mother is a very strong woman, and she said it's, I want to live our lives in the open. And so she embraced that truth. And as I say in the book, you know, I went looking for my father, but at the end I found my mother. And that was a really powerful gift that I got in the search of this. And I say that to all the folks out there, is that I think the book will inspire you to have those conversations in your own life, or even to reflect. I have a website, aftervisitingfriends.com, where folks have been sharing their stories about their families and how the book has inspired them. So I think it's powerful when you do embrace the truth inside those secrets.
Michael Haney, in conversation with Carol Marks. His memoir is titled After Visiting Friends, A Son's Story. It's published by Scribner. If you'd like some more information about it, go to the website aftervisitingfriends.com. Coming up, conversations with our senior correspondent, Richard Neer. A little bit of discussion about healthy cooking from the Mediterranean and more. When A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in just a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving, according to the U.S. Department of Energy. Speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray. Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly. That's socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we come to the final half hour of our big two-hour weekend get-together. And we're joined the rest of the way by our senior correspondent, Richard Neer, who just moments from now is going to be speaking with Dr. Angelo Acquista. He's a New York Times best-selling author, and he's going to talk to Richard about his latest book, The Mediterranean Diet Cookbook, A Delicious Alternative for Lifelong Health, published by Bantam Books. Let me guess, Richard, he's going to talk about olive oil.
Yeah. Not Popeye, but olive oil.
Oh, yes. Popeye.
But, you know, the funny thing is we think of olive oil as, oh, man, it's got a lot of calories. It's fattening. Mm. And Dr. Acquista explains that calories, there are good calories and bad calories, good fats and bad fats. And actually, olive oil is the best kind of thing that you can do because it's good. Good fat.
Why do people? I cook with olive oil, and you know I'm a man of modest means. Why don't more people cook with olive oil? Is it because it's so much more expensive than, you know, the other kind of oil that is not good for you?
I guess that's it. I don't really know. I find olive oil, I don't know, when I think about olive oil, I think of a flavor, where some of this other oil is kind of bland and flavorless. But olive oil, I like the flavor of.
You ever cook with the zero-calorie sprays that you put, if you put it on Teflon, and they have the zero, like Pam, you know, right, that's a brand name, and there's generic versions and others. You spray the pan, if it's Teflon, with it, and you can actually create like fake fried food. It's fried, but it's not fried in oil. It's that oil fried that gives it, you know, the home fried potatoes and the, you know, greasy fried food that tastes so good and is so bad for you. But if you do that spray stuff, or maybe a little bit of olive oil with the spray stuff, you actually can create sort of a faux fried food flavor. You ever do that?
Or an explosion.
Yes!
Olive oil and Pam!
Does it really blow up? Oh, my gosh. No, I don't think so. We're going to get letters now from people going, you're not doing that, are you? That's horrible.
Well, you know, vinegar and bleach, you mix that, and that can be toxic.
Yeah. All right. So, do not do what I just said, folks. Don't
cook with bleach.
Don't cook with bleach or vinegar or Pam. Well, you can cook with Pam, but don't mix it with bleach. All right, we got out of that one. Dr. Angelo Acquista and Richard Neer next, and then, on top of everything, Richard will be back for the final words before this hour is through. When A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in a moment.
You're age 65, and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
She's conquered some of the most challenging ski courses anywhere, but with only one leg, the odds were against her even walking.
The growth was stunted in my right leg when I was born, and the doctors told my mother we needed to amputate when I was 5 years old.
Bonnie was helped at a Shriners Hospital, one of a network of 22 hospitals helping kids throughout North America. Shriners Hospitals provide world-class orthopedic and burn medical care, and they offer that care totally free of charge.
The care and treatment the Shriners gave me was a gift. It wasn't just about learning to walk. They helped me to believe in myself.
There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area realize their dreams.
If I went back to the Shriners Hospital and talked to the nurses and doctors, I would say thank you. Thank you for making my dreams come true.
If you know a child they could help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to GoDirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and here again, as promised, is our senior correspondent Richard Neer in conversation with Dr. Angelo Acquista. His book is titled The Mediterranean Diet Cookbook, a delicious alternative for lifelong health, published by Bantam.
But, Doctor, that's not really the reason you should transition to a Mediterranean diet just for weight loss, right?
Absolutely. The reason why, when I was approached by Random House, I wrote the book was that I would give my patients on my prescription pads my recipes that I was brought up with. And when I wrote the book, I researched about 800 medical journals. And within that research, I put everything into the Mediterranean prescription. And it's been known for quite a while that the Mediterranean-type diet, the Mediterraneans have one of the longest lifespans than anyone else in the world, lowest incidence of cancer and heart disease and stroke and cardiovascular illness. And so in the book, I tried to explain to the people the components of the Mediterranean diet that allow the Mediterranean to live longer lives, healthier lives, and better quality lives.
Now, Doctor, the cliche, you know, when we hear Mediterranean, we think Greece and we think a lot of olive oil, but that's not the whole of it. Give us a definition of what a Mediterranean diet mostly consists of.
Well, the Mediterranean diet consists of all the foods that we essentially see in the Mediterranean basin, which is known as our Fertile Crescent. The Mediterranean-type diet, which is typical of people in the southern part of the Mediterranean, includes many vegetables and fruits. Many people, because that area is unindustrialized, they all have little pieces of land where they grow their own fruits and vegetables. And so the typical Mediterranean diet consists of fruits, vegetables, nuts, very little meat because of the poor nature of the people in that area. Now things obviously have changed a little bit. Maybe meat once a week because out of necessity they couldn't afford it. And as I said earlier, fruits, vegetables, nuts, and legumes are the staple of the Mediterranean-type cuisine, and also a lot of olive oil. Olive oil has been found to have many healthful effects in many medical journals, including the recent publication that came out in the New England Journal of Medicine. Olive oil has been found to decrease the incidence in people of strokes, heart attacks, and prolonged life. There are some facts that people just are not accurate about in terms of the fat content of olive oil. What I tell everyone is, it is not the fat calories that you eat, but it is the type of fat calories. The fat calories that are in olive oil, number one, do not make you gain weight. And number two, they have a protective effect because of its potent antioxidant activity. And so in the study that recently came out in the New England Journal of Medicine, they showed that people that are having quantities of up to a quarter cup or 4 tablespoons extra of olive oil every day actually fared well. And I also say this about nuts. People are concerned about the fat content of nuts. Studies have shown, and they've done these studies, where they've given people the same number of calories and compared them to the calories from a fat... from animal fat, fat from the nuts, and fat from the olive oil. And when they control for the total number of calories in those people and the type of fat that they were eating, those who were on nuts and olive oil, those fat calories, they actually lost weight. And those that were on the diet with calories from animal fat, they gained weight. And so that's typical for the Mediterranean-type diet. The typical nature of it is nuts, legumes, fruits, and vegetables, and a lot of olive oil.
Oh, interesting. You said non-industrialized. And isn't it possible that some of the, because of the industrial nature of our country and where our food comes from, that there might be pollutants or industrial things that seep into our food chain that also have an effect on this?
That's a very interesting question that you ask. So many of my patients and colleagues, when they travel to Italy, they say, you know, I ate so much when I went there. I ate so much, and I can't believe it. I didn't gain any weight. They try to eat the same quantities here in the United States or other Western nations, and they gain the weight. The difference is processed food. Industrialized nations, because of the big cities that we live in, it becomes easier for us, and we have more access to processed foods. The difference is the processed foods. In my diet that I give to people, and in my maintenance diet also, where I liberalize the diet, there's nothing in there that's essentially processed. This is how the Mediterraneans eat. They go pick the vegetables, they eat them. They pick the fruit, they eat them. I remember as a child, we used to go to the countryside to shake the trees to get our own almonds. We used to make our own olive oil. Everything is eaten and not processed freshly. So the difference here is in industrialized nations, it is easier and it is more accessible to get to processed foods. And that, I think, makes the big difference in terms of the weight gain that people get and the unhealthful benefits that people think they're getting, for example, if they're eating a chicken. The chicken here is processed. The chickens in Sicily, they're running around, running wild. They may be a little tougher, but they're healthier.
Now, Doctor, if you're used to this sugar, junk food, preservative diet in this country, is there a transition period to get to the Mediterranean diet? How does one go about doing that?
Well, the transition period is this. If you're overweight and you want to lose weight, you adhere to the way that I would recommend that you lose the weight. It's a two-week program, and those who are very heavy, who are morbidly obese, they may be on it for a longer period of time to lose weight. And I've had patients lose up to 100 pounds over a period of time. The whole thing behind a diet is you have to be able to sustain it. So to the part that you have weight loss, once you've lost the weight, we then give you a maintenance diet, which is very typical of what Mediterraneans eat. And that means you need to taste various kinds of foods. You cannot have a strict regimen of food because it's unsustainable to keep a restrictive diet. And so what we recommend, what I recommend in the Mediterranean prescription for weight loss is, in that form of transition, is the typical diet of weight loss would be you get up in the morning, you have one slice of toast, no butter, no jam. You have one cup of coffee, no milk, or one cup of tea. And then you can have up to 5 egg whites, whether they be hard-boiled eggs of the egg whites, or you can have an omelet or scrambled egg whites. That in the morning is very important. You need to eat at least 4 to 5 times a day if you want to lose weight, because we get the thermic effect of eating. The more we eat, more frequently we eat, our bodies are stimulated to increase their metabolism. The worst thing you could do is eat once a day. Your body shuts down its metabolism, and then anything you eat at night is going to turn into fat. And so then to go for lunch, in that transition period, the whole trick here is not to be hungry. I tell you, you can snack if you want on a couple of apples or a pear. They have pectin in it. They expand in your stomach, and they prevent you from being hungry. I tell them that if they feel terribly hungry, that transition period also should be they can take some almonds or some walnuts that they can snack on. And then when it comes time for lunch, they can have up to a half a chicken, no skin, no frying. I don't think many people are going to be hungry after they finish a half a chicken. They can have up to 2 pounds if they want of any kind of fish as long as you don't fry it. And the whole trick here, which we put in the book, is you have to vary what it is that you're eating. Vary the preparation of the chicken. Vary the preparation of the fish. You can have as much salad for lunch as you want, oil and vinegar dressing. You can have as many vegetables as you want, no potatoes. Again, snacking in the afternoon with what I mentioned earlier. And then the same thing at night. Up to a half a chicken, no skin, no frying, as much fish as you want, as many vegetables as you want, as much salad as you want. Once you finish eating this type of diet and you vary it, you're going to get up from that table not feeling hungry. And the whole trick here is not feeling hungry, because the toughest time to lose weight is the first month, because your body thinks it's starving. Your stomach is already expanded from all the food that you've been eating, and so we prevent you from feeling like you're starving by allowing you to eat a lot of fish, by allowing you to eat a lot of vegetables and salad. And eating vegetables and salad are very important because they have fiber and they stay in your body longer, and so it's you feel more satiated for a longer period of time.
That's Dr. Angelo Acquista, New York Times bestselling author, and his book is titled The Mediterranean Diet Cookbook, A Delicious Alternative for Lifelong Health, published by Bantam Books. And the interview, of course, was conducted by Richard Neer. He'll be right back to join us in a few minutes when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
For almost every American worker, Social Security is part of the plan for a secure retirement. It's important to know how the program works. If you have questions, the answers are easy to find when you visit www.socialsecurity.gov. Use the retirement estimator to get a benefit estimate. Browse our frequently asked questions. You can even apply for benefits online. Visit www.socialsecurity.gov to figure out your retirement plan. That's www.socialsecurity.gov.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we are going to continue with our conversations with our senior correspondent, Richard Neer. And Richard, it's funny, I just received an email from you. Richard and I are friends for a long time, folks, and we send each other emails like friends do, of articles and funny items and jokes and things of that nature. And Richard just sent me an email tying into, linking to an article in Slate magazine about who would win in a fight, a professional boxer versus a gorilla. And I haven't had a chance to read it yet. And I've been wondering since, you know, by the time this airs, because, you know, full disclosure, we record this a couple of days before airtime on the weekend, so I'll have read it by then. But my feeling, Richard, is that a professional boxer would beat a gorilla in a match, in a quick match, a fight. In a long term, the gorilla would probably maybe prevail. But I think that with a boxer's speed, agility, and knowledge of punching, he could probably stop a gorilla in his tracks before the gorilla would beat the boxer. Am I right?
The first thing I think about is what it says about our relationship. When I send the first thing I think when I see that article is, I'll send this to Michael.
Well, why do you think I would like? Why do I like stuff like that?
But you
that?
Did. You yeah. would.
Well, I always like. I like. You know. Like. You know. Rocky V. Rocky is an old man versus a young champion, and they had them on a computer, and then they did the real fight. Or you ever remember the old baseball game between the 1929 mm-hmm. Yankees and the 1969 Mets?
Oh, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
yeah.
But in this case, they had a couple of anthropologists and scientists, and the article is in Slate. You can find it. Mm-hmm. And basically they said the gorilla would outweigh the boxer, something like 4-1. Mm. The boxer, there's no way the boxer could really hurt the gorilla. It's so strong. And the fact is that the gorilla is a instinctive fighter. The gorilla doesn't have to think like the boxer does, like, okay, I'll fake a left jab and give him a right cross. The gorilla just reacts instinctively, so it would be much quicker. So the boxer, if he's really good, might last about 60 seconds with the gorilla.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. So strength, the kind of strength that an animal has over a human, if you know, unless we're talking about a little dog or a big human, but you know, a gorilla and a person or a bear, you think about, you know, bears, they're so cute, people think they're cuddly, oh, look at the cute bear, and then the bear mauls them.
Well, when they weigh 800 pounds and you weigh 200, maybe, there's a size difference.
Well, weight, and weight usually wins. Now you're a sports commentator among your many, many skills, and I know boxing and mixed martial arts are not the hottest sports right now on sports talk radio. They talk more about, you know, baseball, football, basketball, and hockey. But I know you've talked about boxing, and that's why they have such carefully monitored weight classes. Weight really counts for a lot, doesn't it, in martial arts or boxing or wrestling? I mean, it really is an advantage.
Well, that's why there are weight classes.
Right.
You know, that's why you don't see a heavyweight against a lightweight, because a lightweight could pound the heavyweight, be quicker, but the heavyweight one blow and the lightweight would be on its back.
Yeah,
so
yeah, it's interesting. Now, does this make us immature? That we are find interest in, like, who would win, a boxer or a gorilla? Is that like the kind of, is that like a kid argument? Remember in Stand By Me, they were fighting over who would win in a fight, Mighty Mouse or Superman? And the kid says, ugh, that's a stupid argument. Mighty Mouse is a cartoon. Superman is a real man.
Well, that's the thing. It's one of these things where you have arguments over unprovable things.
Exactly.
But isn't there a show on cable now where they actually investigate things
yes.
like that?
Yes, and it's fascinating. We're running out of time, so maybe we'll talk about it another time. A lot of fun. Richard Neer, thank you very much. Thank you, Beverly Santanello, on the front line, putting it all together. Carol Marks, the host of the show, we certainly are grateful to you. Steve Wiseman, Kevin Casey, the entire Touch of Grey broadcast team. I'm Michael Harrison, inviting you to join us next weekend right here for another 2-hour installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups.